Get ready to jump off sides. We're going to get you with the hard count.
My boy's waiting, smart.
Here's your host.
Get the gum out of your ears and listen up.
Andrew Garda.
I am friggin' velvety smooth.
Here we go again. Yes, folks, it is another edition of The Hard Count. I am Andrew Garda. Got a lot to go over tonight. Special guest interview with Matt Waldman, fellow football guy and one of the idea guys behind FantasyThrowdown.com. We're going to talk to Matt about that and a little bit about his upcoming rookie scouting portfolio, his draft guide for the offensive players in the draft that you will hear way too much about during the draft process because I'm a huge fan of it. We're going to, of course, do my picks, talk about my picks from last week, talk a little bit of news and notes. But before we do anything else, I don't even know where to start with this Penn State thing. This is, of course, The Hard Count, which is the NFL podcast of CheeseheadTV.com, so you can always catch The Hard Count on CheeseheadTV.com. Also catch it on the iTunes feed. And, of course, you can catch my weekly column from the press box over at CheeseheadTV.com. You can also catch all of my fantasy stuff at FootballGuys.com and a mix of fantasy and NFL stuff at BleacherReport.com. So you can head out there. You can always hit me up at Twitter, Andrew_Garda, G-A-R-D-A. You can always email me at thunderblurb@gmail.com. But so this is the NFL podcast, right? This isn't just the Packers podcast. It's the NFL podcast. I don't talk a lot of college football. But what's been going on with Penn State is so unbelievably rage-inducing, I guess, is the best way that I can even begin to describe it. So let me give you a heads-up warning here. All right, so first of all, I'm going to beg your indulgence. We're going to talk pseudo-college football. We're not even going to talk about the game. I'm not even going to talk about college football right now. We're going to talk about a program in the college football arena. So I'm going to beg your indulgence for that. Let me give you a heads-up. If you have spent the last 24 hours making excuses for Penn State, Joe Paterno, or anyone involved in this, just do us all a damn favor and turn the podcast off because you're not going to like the next 15 minutes. You're not going to enjoy it. You can send me the hate mail. You can hit me up on Twitter. You can be pissed. You're not going to like it. If you have been sitting there describing how you think that all of this is nobody's fault but Sandusky's, and let's start right there. Horrible human being, evil acts. But if you think that everyone else involved in this did what they needed to do and they're fine, just turn the podcast off. I'm sorry, I can't put it any better than this. I don't want you listening. Because all I'm going to do is aggravate you for the next 15 minutes. So skip, come back next week. We'll talk just pure NFL. Or hell, fast forward to the Waldman interview because that's how I'm going to get the taste out of my mouth for this crap. Because Matt and I pre-taped it. Great interview. That's how we're going to clear our heads. But if you are not one of the deluded Penn State faithful, then welcome to the podcast and welcome to my rant. I haven't done one of these in a long time, and I was saying on Twitter today, I desperately wish that this was a live podcast because I like having the chat room for stuff like this. They get me fired up. And I have been working towards getting this live again. It's just too much other crap going on right now. But we will do that at some point. But I digress. This Penn State thing, for those of you who have been either living under a sports rock or have been deftly avoiding news, the brief synopsis, recap, whatever you want to call it, is this. Recently, a grand jury has put, I don't know, 40 counts of essentially child molestation against Jerry Sandusky, who was a coach with the Penn State Nittany Lions about 10, 15 years ago, and is allegedly a serial pedophile. Let that part of it sink in. Let's just start from there. Sink that in for a second. Back in 2002, Sandusky was witnessed by a grad assistant sodomizing a 10-year-old boy in the shower of the football building. In the house under a rug, apparently. Okay, so just, if you haven't been following this, just prepare to have your shorts blown off. Because that's bad enough. Like, just stop right there and let that sit for a second. That's bad enough. But then the grad assistant, who ends up being current wide receivers coach Mike McQuarrie, saw what was happening, witnessed, and this is I'm taking this from College Football Talk, because I haven't read the actual deposition, but witnessed a naked boy whose age is estimated to be 10 years old with his hands up against the wall of a shower being subjected, and I'm just going to leave it at that, by Sandusky, being molested. Okay, McQuarrie went to talk to his dad about what to do next. All right, let's start right there. Forget as a parent. Forget as a man. Forget as an adult. But if you're Mike McQuarrie, how the hell do you walk away from that situation? Let's just start right there. I don't give a damn if you're in your 20s, in your 30s, in your teens. You know something's wrong there. At the very worst, if you can't grasp how to deal with this, you go get security. Because there's no portion of this that is okay, and you know it. But now, you know, God, it's like you walked in on your roommate. Mr. McGraw, you know what? I saw my roommate having sex with his girlfriend, and it was disturbing, and I just left. I felt embarrassed, and, you know, now it's a 10-year-old boy. It's a child, and you left that situation. All right, let's start there. Let's just start for how wrong that is. You talk to your dad says you need to talk to Coach Paterno, you need to let people know. So you go to Paterno, and Paterno said to the grand jury that he called athletic director Tim Curley and told him that he had a grad assistant who had seen, I believe he described as Jerry Sandusky in the last building showers fondling or doing something sexual in nature to the young boy. So Curley and others kind of moved. They were, all right, we'll take care of this, Joe. And then Joe Paterno never followed up. And we know he never followed up because a grand jury told us that he never followed up. How in the hell do you have a graduate assistant come to you and tell you that he saw something like this, even if he didn't get specific? Even if his... I don't know, I saw, you know, Coach Sandusky with a boy, and they were doing something, and I didn't know what to do, and I freaked out, and I left. We need to do something. Okay, so McQuarrie doesn't go get a cop, doesn't break it up, leaves this poor kid, goes to Paterno. McQuarrie, my hands are done, I've done what I need to do, and moves on. Paterno goes to Curley. Hey, this is what happened. My hands are washed. I'm all done, too. I'm finished. Right. I'm so pissed off about this that I can't even see straight right now. Because, of course, then after that, you know, Curley and company banned Sandusky from bringing children onto the campus, and that was pretty much it. Now, at the time, Sandusky was not a coach anymore. So that's Joe Paterno's excuse. Well, he wasn't a coach anymore, so I let the athletic department deal with it. It wasn't my responsibility anymore. And I'm sure somewhere in Curly's head, it's like, well, you know, honestly, he wasn't an employee of the university anymore. So, you know, we just forbid him from bringing more of his victims onto the campus. Are you freaking kidding me? That's your answer? And by the way, do you notice the one thing I didn't mention in this entire story? Yeah, nobody called the cops. In all of this, not one person called the police. And all that happened, nobody stopped and thought, huh, maybe we should involve the authorities in this. So Sandusky goes on his way, and it takes 10 years almost for him to be brought to justice. 10 years. You think that this story can't get weirder? Oh, I digress. Because I'll tell you what happened on Penn State's campus tonight. Joe Paterno, coming back from practice, is greeted by the student body on his front lawn, cheering for him, supporting him, being so, you know, we love Joe Paterno, he's being wronged. Penn State, what the hell is wrong with you? I'm not saying you need to throw stones at the guy. But can you honestly stand there and cheer him on right now? What is wrong with you? And some people are like, well, you know, they're students. They don't have kids. Well, first of all, that's not necessarily true anymore. There are plenty of people in college who have kids because they weren't careful when they were young. But let's put that aside for a second. A lot of them have brothers and sisters. So what you're telling me is that you wouldn't be pissed off at Joe Paterno for what happened if your brother or sister was molested by Sandusky. And everybody keeps saying, well, he did what he legally had to. Awesome. He did what he was supposed to do. How about what he should have done? How about stopping and being a human being for 5 minutes and not a freaking football coach? To sit there and think that he never went to follow up on what happened. That he was part of this. And the same thing with McQuarrie. How do you never go back and figure it out? And now you got to look at the fact that McQuarrie's still a coach there, or has become a coach there, and wonder if he had a little shut-up money involved. I mean, this whole thing is disgusting. What is wrong with Penn State? Like, the athletic department, you know, talk about putting football ahead of everything else. That's what just happened. And there are up to 20 people who have now come forward that Sandusky has allegedly, and I'm putting air quotes on because I'm sorry, this is wrong, but he's guilty as far as everything that I've seen. Now someone's going to be like, well, thank God you're not on the jury because he's innocent until proven guilty. Well, let's not lose focus on who did all these horrible things in Sandusky. But, I'm sorry, unconscionable is the only word that comes to mind when I think about the athletic director, the president, Graham Spanier. Joe Paterno, Mike McQuarrie, anyone who is involved in this, and let it go. Every single one of you. And the student body who showed up to rah-rah Joe Paterno today. Beat Nebraska! Beat Nebraska! Screw you. I mean, honestly, here's a quarter, buy some humanity. Because what you just supported is completely horrifying. Oh, I feel so bad for Joe Paterno. I can't imagine anything being as bad as what he's having to go through. Oh, I can, being sexually molested when I was 10 by an adult. I can imagine that. I would think that might be worse. How about instead of going and rah-rahing Joe Paterno right now, Nittany Lions, why don't you have a little prayer ceremony or some sort of gathering or some sort of other thing to show support for the victims of your stupid athletic department. Because as much as these kids, now young men, are victims of Sandusky, they are the victims of your athletic department. Your athletic departments need to cover its own ass. And guess what? The truth will out. And it did. I'll tell you what needs to happen now. That entire athletic department and that football staff needs to get cleaned. They need to be gone, and they need to be gone now. All right, I'll give you this. When they're found as having been culpable in this, even if they're not found legally guilty of anything because they, quote-unquote, legally did what they needed to do, they did the bare minimum. And there's not a damn person who they're being honest with themselves and not being blinded by Nittany Lion colors or being blinded by the greatness of Joe Paterno, but not one human being out there who doesn't think that this was wrong from go. You cannot honestly look at what happened at Penn State and tell me that you believe that they did what was right. They did what they had to do. Much like when my children clean their room. They do the bare minimum. You know what? The bare minimum isn't good enough, and it sure as hell isn't good enough in this situation. I am outraged at this. This is ridiculous. It is tragic. It is horrifying. I cannot imagine what these victims are going through, having to hear this crap, that the Penn State faithful were there to support Joe Paterno. Oh, poor Joe Paterno. Oh, poor football team. You know, guys, you know that I am a passionate football fan. I love football. I love college football. I love pro football. But this is so far beyond the pale that I'm physically disgusted. I cannot fathom that people would take their zeal for their school to this extent, both to cover up the horrifying acts of Sandusky and to actually gather on someone's front lawn to cheer him on, to give him support. Because, oh, poor guy, he's under such duress right now. And he did enough. He did what was the legal requirement. And frankly, I don't even think he did that. Yeah, he kicked it upstairs. But again, no cops called. There were no police officers involved in this. How is that physically possible? How is it possible? How is that possible that you don't have the police involved in this? From McQuarrie all the way up, every one of them was protecting the school. They were protecting their jobs, their asses, not the children. And I've seen a lot of talking heads on this, so I don't know if this was a Matt Millen quote or a LeVar Arrington quote or who it was. But someone was like, if we're at this point in our society where we cannot protect our kids, then we have a real problem. When it's bad enough that you have to worry about whether your kids can get snatched out on the street when you're not looking. Within an institute of learning like this, which should be a protected environment, to then have a group of people turn their eyes and let it go is horrifying. It's unconscionable. It's unforgivable. These people need to be fired. The moment that whatever fairness in the bare minimum has been fulfilled, goodbye. Good luck. Get the hell off of my campus. New athletic director, new coach, new assistant coach, new president. Gone. Bye-bye. Don't let the door hit you in the ass. Because this cannot stand. So I just kind of had to get that out. Because as I'm watching this unfold, I'm getting angrier and angrier at the just sheer willingness to be selfish and inhuman. You know, and I'm not even ranting. I mean, I'm not even ranting about Sandusky or what he did. Like, I can't fathom it. I can't wrap my head around it. I can't wrap my head around abusing children, you know, in any way, shape, or form. I can't wrap my head around beating them. I can't, like, none of that, you know, and thank God. But he right now, I mean, he's not in jail. He's out on bail. 40 counts of child molestation. I'm not even sure what the entire charge is. Child sex abuse, I think it is. And he was let go on $100,000 bail. Are you crapping me? $100,000 bail. 40 child sex charges, $100,000 bail. What the F, Pennsylvania? Insane. But I'm not going off on that. I mean, it's horrifying. I could spend an hour just ranting about that. But I think we really need to look at... This isn't, you know, because I was talking back and forth with Robert Littal of Black Sports Online on Twitter. And you know, we were talking, it's like, honestly, it isn't about Joe Pa keeping his job. It's about the culpability of an entire department, a group of people, to not only allow this to happen, but turn a blind eye. And I've said this several times today, and I know I'm butchering the quote, but essentially the thing that comes to mind is, the only thing needed for evil to overcome good is for allegedly good men to look away. All it takes for something horrifying to happen is for the rest of us to let it happen. We dropped the ball. This is on all of us. Because it's acceptable to let football departments do whatever the hell they want on college campuses. It is acceptable because football is big business. We see crap like this all the time get swept under the rug. Not like this. I'm sorry. Not stuff like this. We see things that shouldn't be swept under the rug, swept under the rug all the time. We see athletes get cut special favors and special treatment. We see coaches get the same thing. It takes enormous, horrifying tragedy like this to make you stop and consider that. Even something as ridiculous as the Reggie Bush crap, or the Cam Newton allegation, or all that stuff, that all gets kind of swept away. It gloms over the truth that this is big business. And as in any big business, they will do everything they can to protect the bottom line, which is the almighty dollar. This scandal 10 years ago would have really hurt Penn State. It might have hurt ticket sales. It might have hurt the possibility on being on national TV. Could have hurt a lot of things. They covered their asses. It's going to hurt them more now. But honestly, not going to hurt as much as it did the 20 victims that they let happen. How many of those kids, how many things took place after this was reported up the chain of command where it was buried? Think about that one for a second. How many people, Joe Paterno backers, idiots on his front lawn, how many people do you think were molested after he didn't follow up again? When he didn't hear anything, when nobody ever contacted him again to ask him follow-up questions, when nobody ever said anything to him about it again. Same thing with the grad student, the now wide receivers coach, McQuarrie. How many people could have been saved? How many children? It didn't, because they were all willing to turn a blind eye because they all benefited financially from not having the boat rocked. From not wanting to believe that this could possibly happen. Any number of motivations None of them mean a damn thing. This isn't about Joe Paterno getting fired. This isn't about McQuarrie getting fired. Although, again, they need to clean house and they need to scorch earth. They need to burn this thing down. But this is about really taking a hard look at college athletics and what's important and what's not important and where it is now versus where it was and where it should be. I think we should take this time and use this horrible moment and turn it into a discussion about what is important in college athletics. What are the priorities? Because if the priorities are what they appear to be right now, and not just here in Penn State, this isn't that part of it's just not about Penn State. It's about Texas. It's about USC. It's about UCLA. It's about Oregon. It's about every school, every big school. If it's just about the business and the dollar, which is what it appears to be, then we need to start calling a spade, and we need to start looking at this as if it's a business and stop kidding ourselves that these are student athletes. The bottom line is, Joe Paterno was one of the most powerful coaches in the nation, probably in the history of football. And rather than use that power, he covered his ass so things wouldn't get rough and uncomfortable. Perhaps because Sandusky was a friend, he didn't use that power. And because he didn't use that power, well, children suffered. All right, so thank you for indulging me that. It's an unpleasant topic. And it just is infuriating. But let's move on past that. And I'm sure we'll talk about Penn State again. And I'm sure we'll talk about college athletics again. And we'll all move on. And all I can really say at the end of the day is I my thoughts and prayers are with the victims and their families. And I really hope that we do take the time to take a hard look at what we consider to be priorities when it comes to our college athletics and what people are willing to do to protect the money that's coming in via football and other athletics. So with that said, let's transition. There's no easy way to transition from this. My rage is spent. I'm sure something will get me riled again soon. But I will say that I want to move on now. So like I said, there's no good transition here. So what I'm just going to do is we're going to clean our mouths out a little bit here. We're going to cleanse the palate. And I'm going to post here the interview I had with Matt Waldman. Matt has started a new site. Those of you who are fantasy football fanatics want to take notice of this. And it's called fantasythrowdown.com. I have a recording here with Matt. He's going to explain what that means and what that means for you. And some of the things, I'm very excited. I played it a little bit. It's a lot of fun. So I will let Matt do the, I'll let him do the honors here and bring in the interview. And I'll see you back on the other side. And again, you're listening to The Hard Count, not the Anti-Penn State Rage-a-thon podcast. This is The Hard Count on CheeseheadTV.com. I'm Andrew Garda, and I'll be right back after the interview. Okay, you're listening to The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda, of course, here at CheeseheadTV.com. This is the NFL podcast, and you guys know I do some fantasy football stuff with footballguys.com and a little bit over at bleacherreport.com, and in my meanderings there and in the NFL draft world, I came across a rather interesting individual. His name is Matt Waldman. You may know him from the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. And if you don't know him from that, for God's sakes, go out and get that thing. If you love football, you'll love it. But Matt's got a new thing going on, so I wanted to have him on the show to talk a little bit about his new project, FantasyThrowdown.com. It is a new concept and how to play fantasy football. Matt, what's going on, man?
Hey, I'm glad to be on, and I appreciate you having me on. Fantasy Throwdown. It's actually, you know, think of it as kind of like, I like to joke that it's kind of like crack for fantasy football addicts, because really what it is a one-on-one fantasy football game where you choose your weekly matchups from three games. You choose three games, and that determines your draft pool. And the drafts take about 10 to 15 minutes if both you and your opponent are online at the same time and one in the draft, or you can do it over the course of a week. And you pick a starting lineup. You can either do PPR, non-PPR, or you can do team defense or with three IDP players. And really, it's just a quick draft for the week. And there's some strategy involved in terms of how you pick the teams that you're going to use for your players, because you can actually block a player from the other person's lineup. And that way, for instance, you know, you pick your team so that you know that there's only going to be two good quality fantasy quarterbacks available in the draft pool. And if you've set it up in a way so that you get the first pick so that you can take that quarterback, and then maybe they feel like they need to take another position, and then you can end up blocking the other one and they're stuck with a scrub. So there's a lot of nice little strategic elements to it, but it's quick, intuitive, easy to learn. And right now it's in beta testing mode, so it's actually free to play.
Yeah, well, and playing is what we're doing right now. In fact, Matt and I are in a little head-to-head matchup, and I, speaking of being blocked, Matt has blocked Vernon Davis in our little matchup here. So, to me, that's sort of the interesting aspect to it. You and I, we've played fantasy football for a while. We definitely have played in all sorts of leagues. One of my favorite leagues is actually, it's a kind of hybrid contract, just a whole bunch of great auction, just a whole bunch of crazy stuff. But the thing I like most about it, and is most unique about it, is the fact that you have home field advantage in this league I'm in. And if you're in home field advantage, then you can go and pick the lineup, the flex lineup, for either offense or defense. And so I like unique things like that. And the idea that you can, the three things that catch my eye about this is, one, that you can block out players. I mean, it costs you a pick, but you can block out a player, that you can decide the type of lineup and change it every time. If you want to play with IDP, you can. If you want to play with team defense, you can. And sort of the idea that if you allow the other person to pick the lineup, then you can get the first pick, and then they get two picks. And so the way that the draft goes is also a little bit different. There are a lot of unique aspects to it that sort of bring in the strategy. What was your approach to come up with something like this? Like, what kind of sparked these little tweaks, some of which we really haven't seen in fantasy football before?
Well, you know, a lot of the credit goes to my partner and colleague, Mike McGregor, who I used to work with at FF Today, and he's one of the main guys at FF Today over there. He's probably one of the most innovative, creative, and unsung people in the fantasy football industry. I think that there are a lot of things that the fantasy football industry, different sites have adopted, that really came from him. And this is something that 6 years ago we were talking about. He had an idea for a game, and he was thinking that maybe it could be like a one-on-one game, and the basics of the game was really his in terms of, coming up with this, just thinking something that we could capture the draft, because we were talking about what it would be like to be able to draft during the year, because that's the best part of fantasy football for most of us is that draft day, and everyone seems to love that. And how do you get that feeling and continue to have that feeling throughout the year? And we thought, well, why not do a one-on-one game? And it's kind of that at its purest. So we toyed around with how do you create a one-on-one concept that would be kind of fun and interesting. And I think it was Mike that really came up with the block aspect to it. And then we just kind of worked at how we could limit down the player pool so it was easier to be able to, pick and make it a quick type of game, but at the same time still have some strategic elements where you had to think about what games you're going to pick or what what draft order you wanted to take or what kind of lineups you wanted to have and scoring system you wanted to have. And putting that all together was really kind of how that came about, and it just evolved over the years as we continued to work on the game and then, you know, work on developing a website and what would be, what would make the most sense. Because for us, what we thought would make, would be cool about this is that then you could use this during the playoffs, because that's the other thing. With fantasy football, you never get to really play, get to draft throughout the playoffs or get to play different people. It's always just one league. So, you know, you can, you could challenge your dad if you're watching the games with your dad, or you can challenge a coworker, or you could play like 100 different people you don't even know, have a 10-minute draft, and you can play this game over the, you know, best weeks of the year to watch football. You know, because I always hear my friends lamenting, man, I just wish, you know, I could be playing fantasy football right now during the Super Bowl, or I could play during this in the NFC Championship game. You know, imagine that Cardinals-Green Bay game that we had 2 years ago that was just a scoring fest. I'm sure people would have loved to have been watching that game and playing fantasy football during that. And I think that's what a lot of this kind of was inspired by.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at especially the postseason, there are some people who do fantasy playoff leagues, but you know, this is a game-by-game sort of assault. And here's the other thing that I kind of like about it. I mean, we all live busy lives, and some of us, like you and I, are a little bit obsessed with our fantasy football, so we don't take days off. But, you know, most people, most other people, have lives outside of football, and maybe you have a week where you just got a ton of stuff going on. So you don't want to play a week. If you're in a regular fantasy league, well, I mean, you still got to set your lineup, and you've got to, there's a lot of things, a lot of little things to do, and a lot of things to do if you want to do your league well, if you want to do well at your league. Something like this, if you want to take a week off, you take a week off, and it's not going to affect you. You just play the next week, and maybe you only get two games in one normally, and you're like, ah, you know, I missed last week. Now I'm going to take four or five challenges. So, you know, that sort of flexibility, I think, is really attractive to people, and it's only going to get more so as we all get busier and busier throughout the season.
I think you nailed it, Andrew, because, I mean, I think back, I don't know, most people who are listening, I think, are probably like us in the sense of that we started fantasy football when we were in our 20s, because the average, you know, you look at the demographic, it's guys in their mid-30s to mid-40s right now. And, you know, when I started in my mid-20s, it was a local league. There wasn't really much to do with the internet in terms of scoring. You maybe had a software package that you could buy. Otherwise, you took the newspaper to the local bar while you watched Monday Night Football, and you tallied the box scores to see who won the games. And it was fun, and that was great. But, you know, as we started to get older, you get families, your job becomes more challenging. You know, you start to, you know, certain things become a greater priority, but I've seen a lot of my friends from my 15-year fantasy league just kind of change over in the draft, where three-quarters of the people were no longer even in that draft anymore, in that fantasy league anymore, because of time. And this is something that I think remedies that, because for them it wasn't so much the one draft day that was the issue. It was being able to consistently research information and you know, really manage their lineups and manage their teams week in and week out. And they found that, you know, they were at a place where it was difficult. So for this, like you said, if you want to play once a month, you play once a month. If you want to play four times in a week, you know, and then not play for another 6 weeks, then fine. You know, you want to pick the weeks that you can have off, you know, where you have off and you can enjoy the experience to its fullest, then you can do that. And what's cool about this is there's also like a ranking leaderboard system that, you know, so that we're, you know, continuing to work on in this beta version, so that you can kind of have, you know, challenge other people and see who's up at the top and try and climb your way up this leaderboard. And I'm hoping that maybe down the line we can create some scenarios where that leaderboard can really be cool, like using maybe tournament type of play, you know, kind of like NCAA basketball style 64 tournament type of stuff that we maybe we can incorporate into this as well.
Yeah, well, I can say, you know, our Jim Day, also known as Fantasy Taz for those of you on Twitter. I think he averages like, you know, and I'm not kidding, like 40 or 50 leagues a year. Matt, I think you may have just ruined him. Like, I think you may have just destroyed what little time Jim has left. I mean, he was the first person I hit up because I you know, I've been meaning to sign up for the last week or so since I saw you send out invites and everything. And then I was like, okay, finally, I have like 5 seconds at work today. I mean, and, you know, let's be honest, you're supposed to be working at work. It's nice to be able to do something sort of casual at work, and you don't need to be on the computer the entire time. You can kind of take your time as you go through. You have a couple days to do it. But, of course, Jim was the first person I hit up, and like 5 seconds after I sent the invite, like Jim was like, yes, let's go.
It's crazy. I've had at least 4 or 5 tweets today from people that say that are joking around, and it's going to have to be like a marketing theme, because they're like, hi, my name is X, and I have a problem with Fantasy Throwdown, you know, or, you know, I can't stop drafting. Thanks a whole lot. You know, I mean, just kind of like the whole AA type of theme there with it, which, of course, we don't want to make fun of anybody who's got an addiction. It's a serious problem, but it's nice to know that people are really enjoying this and, you know, find themselves that if they love playing fantasy football, that this is a great outlet to be able to draft. And it's kind of a quick fix with a nice little strategic tweak to it.
Well, all right. So why don't you tell the listeners how they get involved in this, what they need to do, and just kind of give them the rundown on what's going on here.
Sure. The easiest way is you just log on to Fantasy Throwdown, which is www.fantasythrowdown.com. You register at the on the homepage there. All you have to do is provide an email address, and I think maybe where you're from, and it can be as vague as whether you're in the U.S. or Canada, or it can be more state-specific if you'd like. And then you can either go into our lobby, and there are public challenges available that you can accept, or you can do a private challenge where you fill out a quick form that you basically enter the email address of who you want to challenge, and that can be either someone on the site or someone who isn't on the site. And then when they respond, basically it leads you from there. It's a very intuitive game. It just kind of starts to ask you, okay, you have the option of the first pick in the draft, or you can choose the first two games from your draft pool and let someone else choose the next. Another option with it. So it just kind of guides you through that until you get into the draft room. And then you have the basically it emails you along the way of which step you are on in your draft process or your challenge process. And the site will notify you of any new changes within those drafts, and it keeps track of all the drafts that you have available. And that's essentially it. People will challenge you, and you'll get an email from them. And it's just one of those things that, I mean, we've already had... I believe we've hit over 1,000 challenges in a couple of weeks here already, with probably about 200 to 300 people signed up right now. So you can tell that a lot of people are challenging multiple times a week. So it's pretty easy to go through. My dad, who has never played fantasy football in his life, played with me last night for the first time, and he couldn't believe how intuitive it was. So. If you got a guy who's watched football all his life but never even thought about playing fantasy football who was liking it, then I can tell you it's pretty intuitive.
Well, Fantasy Throwdown, even Luddites like it. I think that's your other catchphrase. But to let listeners know, as we're recording this, both Matt and I are drafting in our face-off, so... it's that easy, folks. Before I let you go, Matt, as I said, we're both obsessed. And I mentioned, for those of you who don't know Matt Waldman, he writes an exceptional draft analysis document, is the best way to put it, called Rookie Scouting Portfolio. It is, 40 bazillion players on the offensive side of the ball, running backs, wide receivers, quarterbacks, tight ends, the whole nine yards, so to speak. And it's fantastic. Of course, something like that is a year-round obsession. Matt, how are your eyes, and how many hours of tape are you watching right now?
Well, fortunately, my father's an optometrist, so I think this profession I'm in, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty well safeguarded in that respect. This is so far. It's just about watching as much tape as I can and studying where I can between other projects that are going on. But really, this is something that I like to call the Rookie Scouting Portfolio kind of a PDF magazine document with a bunch of supporting analysis. Basically, I show my work. Like, if you took a look at, say, the Sporting News draft guide on, you know, their magazine that comes out in late March, early April, you know, you can consider my publication kind of like that for just offensive skill players. But then instead of where they just give an analysis, I actually show my film study work play-by-play breakdown. So if you want to go to that much detail or want to see the exact process I take and how it's defined, I provide that too. So it ends up being, you know, a whole big supplement of pages that you can you know, take a look at. But it's easy to go through and look through. In terms of navigation and spot from there, because that's all at the back of the publication. But yeah, I mean, right now I've probably looked at probably about 50 or 60 players really in depth. I probably have another 100 to go, you know, before the publication date on April 1st. And, you know, so far it's very interesting. It's an interesting class of quarterbacks. We've got some, you know, obviously some really talented players. You know, and it looks like it's going to be a good year for skill players overall.
Well, yeah, and you've been blogging now. You've got your own website where you've been sort of vomiting out all of your excess, I think, you know, everything that doesn't end up somewhere else ends up on your website. Why don't you let people know where they can get that?
Yeah, and that's mattwaldmanrsp.com. And really a lot of that is, it's more football analysis and fantasy analysis, a lot of talk about rookies, techniques that I'm, you know, kind of instructional techniques about what to look for in watching players at certain positions from what I've learned over my years of study, putting together this publication. Because, I mean, once you start watching, you really do become a student of the game, and getting to have a chance to talk with at length with some really excellent people like, you know, Greg Cosell, and really just kind of swap notes and compare, you know, what we look for and what we watch and what we think about specific players. And I've got some interviews with him up there. I've got a 6-part series with Cosell where we talk about a variety of things about film evaluation and NFL players and trends, as well as folks like Wes Bunting, Chad Reeder, Dan Shonka, you know, a variety of people along those lines. And, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, if you're a football fan, I think in general you'll get a lot out of it just to check out. And that's mattwaldmanrsp.com.
All right. So that's Matt. He doesn't have much to do ever, so he's usually pretty bored, is what we're learning here about Matt Waldman. But now, I appreciate you coming on, Matt. And, you know, before I let you go, right now in your tape watching, who is the one guy that we don't know about who we should be watching on Saturdays?
Wow. You know, that's a great question. And I would say that, you know, there are a number of guys that I think folks talk about that, you know, there's underrated guys like Doug Martin that people talk about. I'd say that a guy that is interesting to me right now that no one's really talking about is Bryce Beal of Houston, the running back. I actually like the skill set. He seems to have the right kind of, you know, dimension size-wise to get a chance as either a lead back in a committee or a feature back one day. And I think he's versatile enough and a tough enough runner that he's someone to watch just to see, you know, where he gets drafted and how he develops.
Well, there you go, folks. Matt Waldman, the Wild Man. Hey, it's the Wild Blurb. We got the Wild Blurb going again.
That's right.
There you go. Nice. We got to do this again. We'll definitely have you back when we start doing some real serious draft stuff as well. And, of course, I'm sure Matt and I will come back with some pretty good tales from Mobile, because that's happening again. So thanks for coming by, Matt. I appreciate you taking the time. And, you know, we'll definitely do this again soon.
Andrew, thanks so much for having me. Take care.
Welcome back from the break.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
It's the Hard Count coming at you.
So as you might imagine, we're going to go over a little bit tonight. My extraordinary rant went a little bit long. But that was Matt Waldman. And again, you can check him out over at fantasythrowdown.com. We recorded this last week. the end of last week, and Matt and I were in the middle of our matchup. I also was playing Jim Day, Fantasy Taz, and I lost both of those matchups. But it's fun, and you can even go right now. You can sign up, and you could get started, you know, playing. You can have a throwdown, as the kids call it, pretty much whenever you want. You just need someone else or need to challenge someone else. And it was a lot of fun, and it's a very simple, easy way to get your fantasy football Jones going. And I think they'll have some big things going on over the next couple of years, but it's a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And yeah, he's probably addicted a lot of us. He's contributing to our general destruction. So let's go through some news and notes here, and then we will do the moment you've been waiting for, my NFL picks for this week. So we've got some interesting developments in a few different areas. First of all, the Oakland Raiders lost to the Denver Broncos this week. So my 8-8 hopes are still alive, Nagler, no matter what you want to believe. I'm not going to talk. I mean, usually we do our Tebow moment here, but I'm not going to talk about Tim Tebow this week. And I think I'm going to put off another Tebow conversation for a few more weeks because I want to see more of what Tebow can do and can't do. At this point, all you need him to do is get a little bit better each week. And then I think what will happen is, you know, a lot of us will take a look at what he does and doesn't do, you know, after week 17. We know Broncos are not going to the playoffs. I mean, I guess they could. The AFC West is such a disaster area. They should tape it off with hazard tape and biohazard it up or something. I don't know. It's a mess. But so I think you ride Tebow and see what you do, and then you know whether you're going to be going after an Andrew Luck or Matt Barkley. The Raiders aren't in the market for a new quarterback, because they just traded all of their picks for one. How much in the tank Carson Palmer has is debatable. Looked a lot better this weekend. Was much more effective. Had three big picks. But that's going to happen with a guy who's been on the shelf for a while. And on top of it, new team, new wide receivers, new playbook. I don't care if he says he absorbed like 80% of it. You're going to have problems. But so yeah, that Denarius Moore, rookie wide receiver, is fantastic. Their biggest weapon, though, has been Darren McFadden. And McFadden went down a couple weeks ago with a foot injury. They'd be like, oh, no, he's all right. He's okay. Well, he hasn't practiced yet. Darren McFadden has yet to practice since October 23rd. When he left very early from the game against the Chiefs. It's almost more disturbing that we're not hearing anything sounding like concern out of Oakland. The fact that he hasn't even started cutting or running or anything is a huge concern. Now, I think we weren't really thinking he was going to play this Thursday. You figured he'd at least be practicing by now. The fact that he's not is a concern, and I think that's a big deal for the Raiders. Michael Bush is a good running back. McFadden's a special running back. I like Tywan Jones, the rookie, small school guy. Very fast, not quite as elusive or tough as McFadden. Well, tough being a relative term when it comes to McFadden, but hard to get down. So they're missing probably their biggest weapon as they get into a meaty part of their schedule. McFadden not practicing is a pretty big deal for this offense, I think. We'll have to see how big a deal. Because the West is totally wide open. Completely wide open at this point. Nobody's completely out. I'd say the Broncos are pretty close. Chargers are no great shakes right now either. But Kansas City's total frauds. You know, I didn't before, and I still don't believe that they're the team that they were, like, on their little run just a couple weeks ago. Although an amazing turnaround, going from, like, winless to even where they are right now. It's not bad. So, but the Raiders could use McFadden back. So I find it concerning that he hasn't even practiced yet. Hasn't cut on it, nothing. Guy who is cutting on his foot is Felix Jones. That may not matter because DeMarco Murray may have stolen his job. Felix Jones may return this weekend and play for the Cowboys. It is, however, a big question mark as to how much time and how many carries he is going to get. He may be 100%, but DeMarco Murray has been playing so well that at this point, you have to think that he's got a huge chunk of the carries. It's going to take an injury or some complete disintegration for Jones to get that job back completely. Of course, the big question is, can the Dallas Cowboys make a run at the title in the NFC East? The answer to that is probably not. Miles Austin is down for 2 to 4 weeks. I'm leaning towards 4 weeks, just because he's already been hurt once. And that alone makes me pretty concerned that he's going to be banged up the rest of the way. They need Dez Bryant to step up, and they need Laurent Robinson to step up. Robinson finally healthy for, like, pretty much the first time ever in his career. And they need Tony Romo to protect the ball. Of course, Tony Romo finds new and interesting ways to completely choke up a game pretty much at any time. So, that's a lot to ask for him to not completely gank a victory and send them home with defeat. But they're only 2 games behind the Giants, and I'm not 100% sold on the Giants. Yes, I know they beat the Pats. It's a nice come-from-behind win. But I think the Giants have a lot of weakness as well. I think they have some problems. And I think that 6-2 is a little shinier than it really is. I think that 6-2 is not a very strong 6-2. And Dallas is only a couple games behind. And they could easily pick that up. If they can get both their backs healthy and they can get Tony Romo to settle down, and they could survive not having Miles Austin, if Dez Bryant can step up, if Robinson can step up, if Jason Witten can be used effectively, the defense can hold up, I think they could definitely catch the Giants. Nobody's catching Green Bay. I don't even know where Green Bay's next loss is going to come. I just can't see it. I'm in a suicide pool with someone. We split the difference, and we're holding Green Bay for, like, when we really need to use them, because it's just hard to fathom them dropping a game, so they're the team you can use, like, kind of whenever you want. Aaron Rodgers is playing out of his mind. I mean, there's no other way to describe what he's been able to do. That offensive line is still not all that great, but he's just deadly. He's deadly right now. If he's not league MVP right now, I don't know who is. He's a great core of wide receivers. Jordy Nelson, Greg Jennings. You know, Donald Driver is good in his role when he plays. Randall Cobb, I think, is a fantastic rookie. James Jones does well. JerMichael Finley at the tight end. I mean, this is a very tight team offensively. Defensively, they've got some issues. Defensively, they have allowed teams to roll up on them way too often. So if Green Bay slips, it's going to be because of that secondary, mostly. And you can't say they've locked up the North because Detroit's at 6-2 and Chicago's at 5-3. But I think you're looking right now at a situation where they're in pretty good shape. You know who's in bad shape? That'd be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and coach Raheem Morris, who's kind of blaming, according to ProFootballTalk.com, Gerald McCoy, his season-ending injury on Gerald McCoy. And is basically saying he doesn't know how to tackle right. Too many arm tackles. Goes all the way back to Pop Warner, says Raheem Morris. That's awesome. Here's a crazy question. But if you see him not tackling correctly and you're a coach, shouldn't you, I don't know, coach him to tackle correctly? Like, I'm not saying that it's not McCoy's fault that he's hurt. I mean, if he's tackling incorrectly and that led to this injury, then that's his fault. But as a coach, would he just go like... You know, you pull a Paterno. Oh, man. I did what I could. It wasn't my job. Gerald McCoy came here. He couldn't tackle. We spent like a high pick on him. I don't know. He couldn't tackle. What could we do? I can't do anything. I certainly can't coach him. Now, it could be that the reports are making it sound a lot worse than it actually is, but honestly... If I'm Gerald McCoy, I might be a little bit pissed off here. Oh, thanks, coach, for throwing me under the bus on my injury. I mean, this is the sort of thing that you say off the field when nobody's around, not to the press. Like, what does it achieve to tell the press that? I'm pretty sure the press wasn't looking at Morris and going, look at McCoy, this is your fault. Probably, and I'm just going out on this crazy-ass limb here, but probably this was somewhat unsolicited. Raheem Morris does occasionally have diarrhea of the mouth. He's not Rex Ryan level, but it's there. I've been impressed with what he's done with Tampa Bay. This year's not working out so well, but I think overall he's been very good for that franchise. I think he needs to keep his mouth shut. Oh, by the way, so I'm eating dinner tonight. I had dropped eldest son off at his junior peewee football meeting. They were watching film of their upcoming opponent. Yes, they take it seriously. So I went and had dinner. And on a TV near me, there was, I think it was Fox or CNN. They had the Joe Paterno thing. And on the other TV was ESPN. And who is up there nattering away... But John, somehow somebody thinks I'm a quarterback guru, Gruden. Talk about Cam Newton. Oh, look at what Cam's done. I remember when I talked to Cam and I asked him how he was a leader. Now he's a leader. Look at all the throws he can make. And look at this. He's an amazing quarterback. Listen, first of all, Cam Newton is freaking outstanding. Like, I thought it would take him a couple of years if he was going to be able to pull this off, but he has done extraordinarily well. That said, there's a long way to go. And I think Gruden should probably stop patting himself on the back for how awesome a call it was that he thought that Newton might have a shot. I mean, sometimes you get him right, sometimes you get him wrong. I'm not a big fan of chest bumping. Well, I'm a big fan of chest bumping when I do it. But I'm not a huge fan of chest bumping, you know, pointing however everybody else was wrong. Gruden's not doing that. But I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that this guy is some sort of quarterback guru, because I can't remember one quarterback that this guy has made into something special. He got more out of Rich Gannon than anyone else had ever and ever did afterwards. So maybe he's a veteran quarterback guru, but he's had young quarterbacks before and they didn't do a damn thing. He has no patience for it. He wants guys who knows what he wants them to do right then. So I don't get it. Like, when did he become, well, I know when he became this big quarterback guru when ESPN decided they had a great segment. And thank God they brought it back for a recap of all the things he said about Cam way back when and how he's doing now. I didn't see him do anything for Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton, the guy who's proving us wrong. I want to see him play in tough weather, but he's been playing incredibly well. Mind you, this is a Bengals offense that's designed for him. But then again, that's the same thing that's going on with Cam Newton. But yeah, so between the Joe Pa coverage and the John Gruden quarterback genius, I think that's a series of short films I should make. John Gruden, quarterback genius. Make it like a CSI Miami sort of thing. Yeah! I may have to ponder that. We may need to, let's put a button in that, a pin in that, whatever the hell you do with it. Let's get back to that. You guys remind me of that later, because John Gruden, quarterback guru, sounds like a fantastic skit. All right, well, we are wildly over. Well, not wildly, but pretty over. So let's do what I know you've all been waiting for. And that is Andy's, or Andrew's, or AG's, football picks. A tradition that dates back about 8 episodes to when Nagler blindsided me with them. And now I do them for you each week. And now I need to quickly find what the... There we go. There's week 10. So last week, I did all right. I got 9 out of a possible 14. Not great, not bad. I missed on the Chiefs. I missed on the Raiders. Missed on the Rams. That was my upset pick of the week. I must have been drunk. Missed on Pittsburgh, and I missed on the Eagles. Who will I miss on this week? Well, of course, this is the week where we start with Thursday Night Football. Of course, those of you who are subscribers and football guys, then you can see my Thursday Night Lights article, which will break down this game, skill player-wise. We have two teams that are going the wrong direction at the same time. This is sort of a test to see who will beat the other one to the ground and crash into a million pieces. Oakland at San Diego. If this was in Oakland, I think I'd be leaning towards Oakland. You've got two quarterbacks trying to find their way. Rivers trying to figure out what's wrong with him. Not having Malcolm Floyd, but Vincent Brown is stepping up. Played pretty well last weekend, so he'll fill in. Vincent Jackson finally woke up last weekend. Don't know if Ryan Matthews is going to play yet. Doesn't sound like it. Mike Tolbert should be fine in his stead. On Oakland side, you'll have Michael Bush running instead of Darren McFadden, maybe a little Tywan Jones, maybe a little Marcel Reese, the fullback. Denarius Moore. Doesn't look like Darius Hayward Bay will play. Probably have Kevin Boss in there at tight end again. Oakland's got a pretty good team. San Diego's been embarrassed a little bit lately. So I do think that this will be a tough game and a close game. But I think San Diego can score more effectively than Oakland. 38 points on the Green Bay Packers isn't anything to sneeze at. I'm going to go with San Diego for this one. I got to track these again. Arizona at Philadelphia. Arizona coming off a huge win against the Rams, or at least a big win for them. Going against Philadelphia, who comes off a very disappointing loss to Chicago, which just about kiboshes their NFC East hopes. It's not out of the wood. It's not completely dead yet, but it's CPR is not working, and they'll flatline soon. Arizona, though, it's just not that good. I don't care if it's Kevin Cobb or, I always want to call him Jack Skellington, but John Skelton. There's just not enough here. You got LaShawn McCoy, Jeremy Maclin, Michael Vick, occasionally DeSean Jackson. I don't think, Philadelphia's still got the problem in the middle of the field, but I don't think that Arizona's running backs are effective enough to really take advantage of it. And I know that the quarterbacks are not good enough to beat the secondary. Philadelphia at home is a tough row to hoe for anyone, much less a crappy team like Arizona, so I'm going with Philly in this one. Tennessee at Carolina. Tennessee's been struggling a lot lately. You finally had Chris Johnson get right on the last game. I don't know that he's going to be able to keep it up. I need to see a couple games from him before I really buy into the new Chris Johnson. But that said, they moved the ball pretty well, and defensively they've been doing all right. Carolina, Cam Newton, Steve Smith, they don't run the ball very much unless it is Cam Newton running the ball, occasionally John Stewart. It's going to come down to whose defense plays better. I think at home, Carolina is a tough out, and I don't like the way that Tennessee has played the last couple of games. I'm going with Carolina at home over the Tennessee Titans. Houston at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay hasn't been able to get their offense started. Their defense hasn't been all that good. Houston, still missing Andre Johnson, will probably miss him until after Week 11 and their Week 11 bye. However, they've still got Owen Daniels. They've still got Arian Foster and Ben Tate. Tampa Bay can't stop them. Even at home, I don't like them. I'm going to go with Houston over Tampa Bay. Jacksonville and Indianapolis. If there's ever a time that Indianapolis can win, this may be it. I like Jacksonville. Don't get me wrong. Maurice Jones-Drew is a fantastic running back. Blaine Gabbert, he's struggling, but what do you want from the guy? I don't think they were quite expecting to have to go to him this early. Indianapolis is terrible now. Or, as Charles Barkley would say, terrible. I kind of want to go with Indianapolis, but I just can't buy into it. I'm saying Jacksonville is going to defeat Indianapolis. That's a road dog. That's two road dogs in a row. Washington at Miami. Miami got their first win. Hooray! Miami's still not very good. Ooh. The Redskins have John Beck. I wanted to start with a hooray, but actually, you can't do that off of John Beck. They've got a mess at running back. They've got no primary wide receiver and a gimpy Fred Davis. This is actually going to be a very tough game for Washington. And I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off. I'm going with Miami at home, finding a way to win two in a row. Could they be heating up for a playoff run? No. Denver at Kansas City. Coming off of a very impressive win over Oakland. Tim Tebow still struggles quite a bit, still has some problems. Here's the thing. This is a game that before the season I thought there was a good chance that Kansas City was going to win because they're very tough to beat at home. However, I don't like the way Kansas City's been playing lately. They have no real run game. Matt Castle is incredibly streaky. Dwayne Bowe is not playing as well as he has in the past or at least last year. I hate to say it, but the Tebow factor here is pretty strong. And consider that John Fox is really trying to move that spread offense into the NFL, at least to see if Tebow can pull it off. And I think Kansas City doesn't have the guns to run with this. So in the interest of keeping my hope alive for an 8-8, as well as the fact that I think that Denver's just got more talent across the board, I'm going with Denver in a big upset in Kansas City. Buffalo at Dallas. Buffalo coming off a tough beating at the hands of the Jets. The Jets just pretty much imposed their will on Buffalo. Dallas struggled a little bit at times against Seattle, but ultimately came out ahead. Buffalo's defense is pretty good. Their offense can be explosive, but they've been on a little bit of a rut lately. Whereas Dallas, they lost Miles Austin, but they're getting Felix Jones back. They have Dez Bryant. Lawrence Robinson is pretty good. You've got Jason Witten. I think Dallas is just a much better team. And at home, I can't really pick the Bills over them, so I'm going with Dallas. New Orleans at Atlanta. Big game. Big, big game in the NFC South. New Orleans has been up and down this season. They're playing pretty well at this point. Atlanta, when they can run the ball effectively, they're looking good. Julio Jones had a ridiculous game the other day, and Roddy White ain't nothing. he's a very good player as well, Tony Gonzalez. This is a very interesting battle. New Orleans, they've got the Darren Sproles factor, Marcus Colston. Jimmy Graham at the tight end. This is a very even matchup in my mind, except for you got Drew Brees. And where Drew Brees goes, wins go. I think Atlanta will make a run at it, but I think ultimately New Orleans wins this game. So I'm going with New Orleans. St. Louis at Cleveland. St. Louis is just losing wide receivers left and right. Greg Salah's gone for the year with an injury. They do have Steven Jackson. Cleveland's a mess. They've got no running game. Colt McCoy is struggling. And on top of it, their wide receiver score is a mess. I don't see Cleveland pulling this out. I'm going with the Rams. Pittsburgh at Cincinnati. Huge, huge, huge battle. This is the game to watch. Unfortunately, the Steelers are just much better defensively and offensively than the Cincinnati Bengals. I think the Bengals still haven't quite gotten a second wide receiver there opposite of A.J. Green. I think the Steelers will take A.J. Green away. I think without Jermaine Gresham at tight end, I think Caldwell and Simpson are still not quite where the Bengals would like them to be to fill in and backfill when A.J. Green is taken out of the game. So I think we're going to see a Steelers victory, especially since they just lost to Baltimore. I think they're going to come out firing. Speaking of Baltimore, they will be playing Seattle at Seattle. Always a tough out to play Seattle at home, but Baltimore coming off of the win to the Steelers, kind of, I don't want to say firing on all cylinders because they struggle, but I think they're more than enough for Seattle. I'm going with Baltimore this week. We have a full slate of games, by the way, kids. No bye weeks, really, for anybody. Detroit at Chicago. So we've got the Detroit Lions at the Chicago Bears. Big division matchup. The Lions, some real question marks at running back right now. The rest of that team is relatively healthy, but when you sign Kevin Smith as a backup running back, you know you're in some trouble. Meanwhile, you've got Matt Forte and an emerging passing offense with, you know, Edgar Bennett, Johnny Knox on occasion. Roy Williams has been playing well. Is at home. I don't think Detroit's able to pull this one out. I'm sorry, Lions fans. You know I want the Lions to do well, but I think this is a Chicago victory. New England at the Jets. It's tough to beat the Jets at home when you're New England. They just came off a tough loss against the Giants. The Jets are flying high. After the Bills, they have gotten their game together. This is not just Homer me talking. I'm going with the Jets. This is a must-win for the Jets if they want to try and get in the first place. And I think Rex Ryan will have them ready to go. I think you're going to see some very exciting football from that game Sunday night. Monday night, Minnesota-Green Bay. We don't even need to break this down. Adrian Peterson against that offense. Two of them can't really compete. I'm going with the Green Bay Packers, quite obviously. That's really the only choice, as Herr Nagler would say. So that's going to do it for this edition, this expanded, rant-filled, Waldman-filled edition of The Hard Count. Thank you for sticking with me for the entire thing. We're almost at an hour 20. So enjoy the expanded edition, and thank you. And thank you for reading my stuff, and thank you for coming out. I would babble incoherently at nobody, but it's much more enjoyable that you're here and I get feedback from you. So I do appreciate it. And I will see you same bat time, same bat channel next week, where hopefully we will have 75% less Penn State talk and a lot more Tebow time, because I know you guys love that so much. I know Aaron especially loves Tebow time, because there's nothing he likes more than talking Tim Tebow over Aaron Rodgers. So there you go. Enjoy, folks. Have yourself a great weekend, and I will see you on the other time on the other side. You can always get a hold of me, thunderandblurb@gmail.com, or follow me on Twitter, Andrew_Garda. Take care, folks. Stay classy and stay safe.
You've been listening to The Hard Count.
Let's go again!
With your host, Andrew Garda.
And you will know my name. Upon thee.
Word!